The following program is suitable for all audiences.
Most basketball teams and coaching staff say, we're going to start our best player.
Yeah.
But the Bulls aren't doing that. The Bulls are starting their best player and then putting four of the players that they'd like to get better around him. And so it's dragging Zach's numbers down. And it's also making the bench look way better. So you see the differential between the bench and the starters. And it's the best bench in the league because most of them are starter quality people. And the guys that are starters are bench quality people.
I'm just very excited about this kid, Pat Will, the paw, as Stacy likes to call him. When you watch how he plays defensively, when the ball's on the other side of the court, he's instantly heads already on a swivel. He's already positioning himself for help. If the ball's up top, he's in almost like a deny situation. He's got his hand ready to go. Offensively, he cuts hard. He boxes out. He goes up for rebounds with two hands. Things that you would think every basketball player would do, which they don't, he does, you know? And it's already at 19.
This is Bulls 101 with Chris Amundson and Laro Golden.
Welcome to Bulls 101. Yeah. My name is Chris Amundson here with Laro Golden. This is our first show, so thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate you guys. We're excited to host Bulls 101, and we're just excited to talk more about Bulls. This has been a really fun season. First of all, we want to introduce ourselves a little bit. So, Laro, why don't you introduce yourself first? Just let people know who you are.
Man, how y'all doing out there, man? And for everybody that showed up, I appreciate you guys coming out and giving us some of your time, you know. But I'm Larry. Everybody that I've known, that they started calling me Laro. So I go by that, and you can call me Larry or Laro, but I would prefer Laro. But for me, this is a great opportunity, and me and Chris couldn't pass it up. This is something I've been wanting to do for a while, is kind of just give my thoughts on what the Bulls are doing and what direction I feel like they're going, and the positives and negatives even. So this is a great opportunity for me, man. What about you, Chris?
You know, at the beginning of the year, I promised myself that I would focus more on content creation and kind of get out of my comfort zone this year, because I've been on Twitter for, you know, 7 or 8 years, been following the Bulls just by myself. But I was always excited to talk with Bulls fans and learn more about the game. And I haven't done that as deep a level as I wanted to until, you know, last 6 to 12 months. And I think it's a great time to start this. I know we're halfway through the season. It's been an exciting season. I think the Bulls are finally looking up. And so I'm really excited to get started to, not only to learn more about basketball, but to help the fans appreciate the game at a deeper level. I think you're constantly seeing the game appreciated at a surface level by the people in the media. And it's always about hot takes, and whatever controversy, you know, of the day that they can produce. And then you've got analytics on the other side. And there seems to be this war between analytics and the media, or like the, you know, the eye test people. But I think if you marry the two together, which is what we're going to try and do on this show, that I think you can find a deeper appreciation for basketball and the people that are playing. And basketball is ultimately an art form, and I think we should appreciate it more as an art form and treat these people that are playing, you know, like people, right? They're just like you and me, and they're trying to do their best. And so I'm really excited to get started. You know, just to give a little background of me, I'm from California. I've never been to Chicago. I did not grow up a Bulls fan. I grew up watching Michael Jordan, like everyone else, Kobe and LeBron and everyone else, right, growing up. But my family wasn't really, you know, they didn't really have any sports interest on a deep level like a lot of the guys here that are listening to the show have. And I developed it actually when I was in grad school. And I went to BYU for my undergrad, and Jimmer Fredette was a big part of my college experience. He was on fire in 2011 and ended up getting drafted to the Sacramento Kings. In 2014, he got traded to the Bulls. So I decided to tune in and watch the Bulls a little bit more on a deeper level. And Jimmer Fredette did not play very much. He was not very good. But I fell in love with Joakim Noah and Taj Gibson and those guys. And just the heart, hustle, and muscle that, you know, you hear Stacey King say. And so I've, you know, for good or for better or for worse, I've fallen in love with the Bulls since then. And I've just really enjoyed, you know, those last couple of years as we've started to turn this thing around, and I'm just excited to get going. How about you, Lara?
And you know what, though, before we dive deep, I gotta tell this story real quick. Right. So for me, basketball wasn't my number one thing. It wasn't, I was just some chubby fat kid that loved Dragon Ball Z and you know, eat my Twinkies, have my Cheetos, you know, I did all, you know, have my stacks, my snacks set up. And then actually, you say Jimmer, which I would respect more than what made me a Bulls fan, is Eddie Robinson. I was an E-Rob guy. that was my guy. And some people will say, you know, he was lazy, he didn't give his effort, you know. But it was Eddie Robinson, and then it was Darius Sungaila, and then it was these names aren't getting any better. But soon enough, Kirk came. I was a huge Kirk Heinrich fan in college. And I just followed him to the Bulls, and then obviously the baby Bulls came about, and I became, I'm not C Red Fred, but you know, that's where I kind of fell in love with the Bulls even more. So
let's say you're glass half bull, right?
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, you know,
the optimistic side of that.
Yeah, definitely. That glass half bull is perfect for me. Perfect. But yeah, man, I mean, the Bulls have been a part of my life for a while now. But obviously, man, this is going to be fun, man. I can't wait to just break some tape down with you, my brother, and get right into it, man. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and this season's been so much more fun since I've only really watched the Bulls on, you know, on a game to game basis since 2014, There haven't been a lot of great performances from the Bulls in that time period. So it's really exciting to see that the front office finally made some changes. We got a new coach in Billy Donovan, who's been, you know, honestly a revelation for a lot of these young guys. Thaddeus Johnson, you know, is having a renaissance year. Zach LaVine is taken to another level. I'm really excited for the future of the Bulls, and I'm really excited to kind of break down what they're doing this season differently from maybe previous seasons, what they're improving on, and kind of getting into deep dive of those schemes. And I know one of the reasons that I was really excited to have you as my co-host is because of your coaching background. You understand X's and O's in basketball on a deeper level than I think a lot of casual fans like myself would understand. And being able to talk to you about these things has been really eye-opening to help me see the game of basketball a little bit differently. Instead of just seeing the dunks, seeing the nice three-point shots, you understand how the play develops. You understand the defensive schemes that are being run. So I'm really excited to dig into your brain a little bit and see, you know, what the Bulls are running, what their opponents are running this year, and how we can learn to appreciate what they're doing a little bit more.
Yeah, man. But hey, man, don't sell yourself short, brother. You know the game. You know the game, man. So don't sell yourself short. We, you know,
just a student. Just a student of the game.
This is a shot. I'll let it know. But you're not out here trying to, you know, get Ben Gordon's jersey retired or anything. So you're not a big, Denzel lover, you know, anything. So it's whatever. It's whatever, man.
Shout out to all the other guys that have been holding down the Bulls podcast and shows for the longest time. You know, we wouldn't be here without them. So shout out our guy Salim Sotirwala on the podcast. You guys got to check out Bulls Gold. Mark K from Australia, he's Bulls HQ. That's how actually Laro and I met. C Red Fred, I've argued with C Red Fred so many times, but you gotta love the guy. You know, you got Ricky and Jason on Cash Considerations. You got Locked On Bulls with Jordan and Matt. Like, there's so many different content producers here that love the Bulls as much as we do, and have helped me increase my appreciation for them. So thanks to you guys. Shout out to you guys. Now I want to get right into this. You know, we're going to try to be here for an hour today. We'll see how that goes. But you know, we really wanted to kind of dive right into what's going on this week with the Bulls. So the Bulls have played some pretty tough opponents: Philadelphia 76ers, Phoenix Suns. They had Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets recently, and finally we got a win right before the break against the Pelicans. So there's been a lot of discussion on the defensive coverage that we've been running, and specifically who who our defensive playmakers are, or sorry, our defensive stalwarts are. And, you know, our front court right now, without Lauri Markkanen, who's still out with that shoulder issue, and Otto Porter, who's the oldest 27-year-old in history, mm-hmm. and Chandler Hutchinson, who's played some four for us this year, is out for personal reasons. So we hope he does well.
Lining, though. His lining's always crispy, though. That's always great.
You know, he went to my high school. You know that Chandler Hutchinson went to my high school. Yeah, he did.
I did not know.
So, I got some love for him, but I hope he's doing well. I hope he gets through whatever he's got going on. But I want to focus on, you know, our front court right now is basically Wendell Carter Jr. and Thad Young. We've got a little bit of mix-in of Luke Kornet, yep. Daniel Gafford. We've seen some Felicio minutes, the GOAT, the best $32 million the Bulls have ever spent, basically. Oh, man. I love that man. Get that money. So, but Wendell Carter has come under fire this week, especially. And anyone who follows me on Twitter, KLA Hoops, knows that I spend a lot of time on Twitter defending Wendell Carter Jr. You know, I don't consider myself like a huge stan of Wendell Carter. I just think he gets a lot of unfair criticism. So one of the things that we've talked about a lot over the last week or two is Wendell Carter's size as a center. He's listed at 6'9", kind of, you know, between 6'9 and 6'10", and he's got a 7'5" wingspan. The wingspan's really good for a center. It's very solid, but he is a little, you know, he's an inch or two shorter than a lot of these centers, and specifically Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic, who are both a little bit taller. Jokic is listed at 6'11", and Embiid is listed at 7 feet. And if you've watched these two players this year, they have beasted just about everyone. But you know, the Bulls have had some tough performances, have given up some late rebounds. Their front court is obviously a little bit thin right now with Lauri being out and some other ones that we've talked about. So Wendell Carter has taken kind of a little bit of the brunt of the criticism this week for being small, right? And there's not much you can do about that. He's 6'9". Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to do is I went through a lot of tape over the last few days, especially in the Jokic and Embiid performances, to see if Wendell's size really affects him and is really, you know, a reason for Bulls fans to be concerned, right? Is this something that we need to be looking for a new starting center because of this size issue? You know, is this really he's just getting owned every night? Or is it, you know, a one-off on these MVP candidates? So I wanted to go through a few of the stats with you, actually, that I went through. So I went and watched every single point that both of these guys made. And so, you know, Jokic had an amazing game. I think he had 39 points. He ended up with 5 free throws. Now, he was guarded by Wendell Carter on 14 of those shots. And so he went 8 of 14, which is about 57%. He was guarded by Luke Kornet on 5 shots. He went 4 of 5 on those shots for 80%. And then he was guarded by Thad Young on 5 shots, and he went 3 of 5 against him, 60%. So Wendell actually had the best, you know, the best luck, I guess you could say, against Jokic on those. But specifically, I wanted to take a look at the type of shots that Jokic was making and taking against Wendell. So Jokic had 10 misses. 6 of those came against Wendell. So I thought he guarded him pretty well. If you look at the tape, if you guys can go just look at the highlights on YouTube, and you can watch each of these possessions by Jokic. And I wanted to really focus in on if Carter's size or lack of it was the reason that Jokic was having a great game.
Yeah.
And so I looked through each of these shots, and a lot of these shots were fadeaway jumpers, hook shots. You know, he had a putback, he had a running hook, he had a corner fadeaway. A lot of these different shots were, you know, he's a very skilled shooter. He doesn't, you know, he's not known as much as a guy who's going to punish you in the post. Now, he did once on Wendell. He did a really great job against Wendell, and I've got it pulled up here. He kind of bodied him a little bit in the post and hit a little short bank shot, kind of almost like layup level shot. So he got 2 points on him, and it was, I thought, because of his size, right? That he was able to shoot right over him, get deep enough because of the extra size that he had. And so Wendell did get 2 points of those points that he got against him. Two of them I thought were specifically because of his size. But the rest of them, Jokic was just playing really, really well.
Yeah.
He was shooting those fadeaways, those turnaround jumpers, you know, making the right passes. He was just he was doing really well. And, you know, Wendell's had a lot of foul trouble this year as well. He's kind of known for his foul trouble. He's actually improved that every year by a little bit, but he's still at 4.3 fouls per 36 minutes, which is just too much. He's getting better, but definitely an area that Wendell
needs to improve. A lot of that is, I think, him just – you could tell when you watch him, he's just having a hard time understanding like, I think also a part of it too, I think a lot of it is with Kobe and Zach on offense, because in terms of the fouls is they don't really allow him to set the screen. They kind of rush, you know, they kind of, once he comes out, they're already ready to come off, when it's kind of like, you know, you kind of want to set it up, you know, you want to set it up, allow him to get set and then use him, you know, and a lot of times they're putting Wendell in situations where he has to kind of like scoot his butt out there, and that's a moving screen, you know. So if you can cut some of those things down, that would be great for him. And then also defensively, just because of the scheme that we run, he can't do what I think that would help him a lot more with these types of guys, is like allowing, like if Jokic, like I see now a lot of teams, they just allow, I shouldn't say allow because these guys are great, but they don't make it hard on these guys to catch the ball. And it sounds so simple, but that means a lot. If you agitate a guy, if you make him work harder than he's used to working, that stuff works. That stuff making them work harder to get to their spots, not just let him walk down to the block, turn around, catch it. He's already in a sweet spot. You know, he's already there where he wants to be. So, but since we're in this scheme of, you know, drop, he's kind of already getting set to be ready for it. So he can't really, get, like, as soon as he crosses half court, as soon as he gets to the 3-point line, you want to already be on his body, kind of make him work with everything he's doing, you know? But you can't really do that because of, like I said, the scheme of running, you kind of be, you know, with Wendell where you're supposed to be. So, that's the tough part about Wendell that I think a lot of people don't really, you know, when they're watching the games, they don't really think about that. You know, they just see the end result. They see that, oh, Wendell, another foul. But they're not thinking about the situations that he's being put in, that he's doing the best with, you know, doing the best that he can with it. So,
you make a great point, Laro. You mentioned the screens. Carter's actually been really, really good this year at screen assists. And so what screen assists are basically when you set a screen that leads to directly to an open shot. And he, the last time I checked, he was top 5 in the league in screen assists. So a lot of people, like myself, I didn't even know what screen assists were a couple of years ago, right? And I wasn't paying attention to when the guard started to run the pick and roll or trying to use the screen, and how that timing can make it really difficult for the big who's setting the screen to avoid a moving screen, illegal screen. So that's something I think that as you look more off ball rather than watching the ball handler, as you're looking more off ball to see what's developing in front of the ball handler or on the defensive side, those things you kind of pick up more, and you see the impact that Wendell's having as a screener, and you can also see the impact, how he is impacted by whoever the ball handler is and their timing with the screen, right? If they start trying to use the screen too quick before it's set up, then the big is forced into a position, as you said, to make an, you know, to kind of stick their butt out. Joe Cuno did that all the time, right?
Yeah.
He'd get away with it. He'd stick his butt real far out and he'd just truck people. But you know, Wendell has gotten better at it for sure, at hiding it. He's gotten a little sneakier with it, but that definitely does contribute to the foul situation. And I know we're going to get into the drop coverage. I really want to talk about the drop coverage more in depth. And I know you got some videos for us to review, because a lot of what they're running as a system is dictating how the opponents are shooting and where they're getting their shots from.
Yeah.
And so it's not just about one person. And we got, you know, Daniel Foy is in the comments, Salim in the comments, saying that you can't guard Jokic and Embiid with just one guy. Nope. And you heard Billy Donovan in the post presser, right? That he said, you know, we tried to double him with Jokic. As soon as you double the guy, he's going to find the open man. He's an amazing passer for a center, or for any player, honestly. He's pretty good. Embiid has gotten super, super good at that face-up jumper this year. There's just not a lot you can do.
Yeah.
But if you look at Wendell's positioning, and my purpose with this is, I don't think Wendell's doing an amazing job, but I think he's doing his job.
Yeah.
I think he's getting to the right spots. He's contesting. And ultimately, what you want to see from him is that and those contests. And if he shoots over you, he shoots over you. But yeah. In my review of Jokic's performance against him, there was really only one shot that Jokic took out of the 39 points that he had, where Wendell's size, I think, was a significant impactor on whether or not that shot was made.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch, I mean, if you watch what Jokic and Embiid do to Rudy Gobert, who's got a lot more size and length than Wendell does. I mean, Rudy Gobert the other night got absolutely trucked by Embiid on a drive. There's nothing he could do. So I think it's interesting that Wendell gets the a lot of the criticism. I think part of that is definitely that he's been out with injury.
Yeah,
and a lot of the stuff that he does doesn't pop on the screen, right? He's not out there getting the big blocks like Daniel Gafford does. He's not a big dunker. He had a really nice one against LeBron that will live in my memory forever. But he's just not – he does a lot of the little things on offense and defense that make the team run better and impact the game in positive ways, but often don't show up in the box score, right? The screen assists aren't really something that normal people track.
Yeah.
And you don't see him boxing out. You just see someone else get the rebound. You say, hey, why isn't Wendell rebounding? Well, Robin Lopez had the same problem. Robin Lopez, our defensive rebounding numbers were always up when he was on the floor. But he wasn't beasting. He wasn't Andre Drummond out there getting 15, 20 rebounds. Exactly. But he was fundamentally sound, boxing out the people he should have so that the Bulls could get the rebound, even if it wasn't him directly. And I think Wendell has a lot of those same qualities. I think Robin Lopez was fantastic at it. Wendell's fundamentally sound, but he doesn't pop on that screen. He doesn't get those numbers. And so if you kind of have to look at a deeper level to really appreciate what Wendell's doing. So I think that's a big reason why he's getting a lot of the criticism, about being undersized. But ultimately, I think his size has not really been, it's the least of the Bulls' issues right now. Yeah. We got a whole lot more going on.
Also, too, just before we get into the next segment, is like, I think a lot of people was getting under my skin after, I think it was the Denver game when they subbed him out. And then, sports radio, everybody, we drafted this guy because he was supposed to be a defensive anchor. That's his best skill. And, and we're sitting him because he can't do his best skill. Then why is he here? Mm-hmm. And it's like, guys, like the reason why Wendell was off the floor wasn't because he couldn't stop Jokic. Because if that was the case, like I told Chris, is like, nobody thinks Thad is going to stop him.
Right.
If Wendell can't stop him, there's no way Thad could, So it's like, guys, you got to think that's what we're trying to do here is like, with this podcast is like to really like think about it. Wendell is off the floor because one, he's still learning how to be a playmaker from the high post, pinch post area in the pocket area. And so at that point when Jokic is just out of his mind and he's just going crazy, now as a coach, you got to say, you know what, Wendell, you're doing a heck of a job. You're doing the best you can right now, but the guy's just playing otherworldly. We're going to get Thad in there because we got to turn this into a track meet. So we got to try to outscore these guys because we're not going to be able to – Jokic is in – when guys like that at that level are in a mode, in a zone like that, there's not much you can do. There's not much you can do at all, And so it wasn't – he wasn't sat because he couldn't stop Jokic because, I mean, guys, Rudy Gobert couldn't stop Jokic. It was more so about him having more confidence in Thad – being that playmaker on offense to help Zach relieve some pressure off of him to be able to help make plays. And when Wendell gets more confidence in himself and he can believe in himself to be that playmaker, which I believe he can be, we see flashes. We see a guy that can make the right passes. We've seen it. He's just got to be more confident in himself. And that's the biggest thing with Wendell, man. It's just, we've seen it. I remember when we seen it in the rookie in the summer league. When we saw him playing, we were like, oh my goodness, we struck gold. You know what I mean? We struck gold, brother. This guy has a chance, man. We saw him shooting jump shots, beating guys shots off the backboard with two hands. Something happened. There was a disconnect. And he's just got to get back to being confident. And we saw it a little bit. We saw it a little bit when he came back after his injury. He was being confident, being aggressive, being assertive. He's just got to get back there, man. He's got to get back there. Because honestly, he's a huge part to our success. You know, when he's playing good on both ends of the floor, he's a big part of it. I mean, obviously, Zach's scoring 30 on efficient numbers, bonkers. You know, efficient
numbers.
You know, it's you know, that helps. But I mean, like, Wendell is like, we need him. We need him to be confident. We need him to get that double-double that he usually just gets in his sleep. He gets you the 10 points and 10 rebounds. We need that guy, you know. But yeah, to go along with that, man, I wanted to get off my chest is that I feel like people felt that he was sat because he couldn't stop Jokic. And it's like, guys, like, nobody's going to stop Jokic. It was just more so on the offensive end.
I don't think anyone argued that Wendell's a better offensive player than Thad right now. Thad is what we hope Wendell can be in the next couple of years, right? You see Thad in that high post, making passes, that little lefty hook. It's amazing. He just makes a lot of great decisions with the ball. And right now, Wendell's getting better. I think he's definitely taken on a new role this year. I think he's improved in the playmaking department, but he's not as polished as Thad is. He's not as savvy as Thad is. You know, right. Thad is not fouling as much. He doesn't turn the ball over as much. I mean, everyone understands that Thad's a better player. And as you said, if the defensive issues can't be solved because you're facing Embiid or Jokic, then, you know, you might as well get the better offensive player on the floor if you're going to be giving up those points anyway. So, and the thing is, if Wendell's size is a problem for you, then Thad's not going to solve that problem. So I don't think that's really the problem. I think people are upset that, you know, these late game situations we're getting out rebounded or whatever, but a lot of that is because we're putting smaller people on the floor to help combat, you know, Embiid and Jokic and those guys. But you're right. A lot of it is, it just doesn't make sense when you really dig deep into it. And that's why I think you heard these rumors this week about Andre Drummond being the Bulls registering interest, according to Shams, right? First of all, I didn't even know this before until this season, but Andre Drummond is actually 6'9 as well. Like, they're the same height, down to the centimeter. Andre Drummond has a little bit of a longer wingspan. He's got like an extra inch on the wingspan. But I mean, they're very, very similar players as far as size. And there's no question that Drummond is a great defensive rebounder.
Yeah.
But our team is second in defensive rebounding percentage right now as a team. We've got, I mean, Kobe's been a great rebounder. Denzel's been a great rebounder. Pat's been a great rebounder. You know, defensive rebounding is not our problem. And so I think when you really look at it, what the production that Wendell's giving you as a starter right now, he's averaging 16, 10, and 3 per 36. He's not playing 36 minutes because that is as I said, has been super good. But you know, that type of production for the contract that he's on a rookie scale contract, he's making $5.5 million this year. You're not going to find a replacement level. You're not going to find a replacement level player. And maybe that's all that Wendell is right now, is kind of a replacement level, just a very average center. But an average center at the money he's making and his age and production, it's just really difficult to replace that kind of player. Andre Drummond, you know, he's got the $28 million contract that we could swap with Otto in theory. But Andre Drummond has just definitely not been as effective as Wendell. He's shooting 10% less efficient at the rim than Wendell is. And 92% of Andre Drummond's shots are within 10 feet. And he's shooting 47% on those shots. 47%. So I don't think he's the answer at starter. I know some people have said, I think, you know, he may start. I just don't think he's not going to solve the real issue, because the real issue is not defensive rebounding. The real issue is team defense has not been very good.
Exactly.
It's been kind of middling to bad the whole year. But a lot of that, as we're going to get into, it has to do with guard play. It has to do with the scheme that the Bulls are running. But yeah, I mean, Andre Drummond as a backup, if you're not giving up anything other than Otto Porter's expiring contract, you know, I think he's better than Daniel Gafford and Luke Kornet and Felicio.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think many people would argue that, but
yeah.
You know, it's a short-term rental to try and help us out this year. I see the excitement from people, but I think Have you watched Andre Drummond since like 2016? Because he's not the same player. He's not that same all-star that he was. He can still be effective, but right now he's really mad. In the Cavaliers, he's the third big. They've got JaVale McGee as the second guy, and then they've got Jared Allen, who's Jared Allen's really good too.
Yeah.
So if he's not happy coming off the bench for the Cavs, why is he going to be excited to come off the bench for the Bulls? I don't know. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Did it make sense to you?
Not at all. I mean, I remember there was a rumor that Brooklyn wanted him. And if Brooklyn doesn't want you, I just – Andre Drummond, he can go ahead and he can fool whoever he wants to fool with his play. I mean, there was somebody that tweeted when he comes here, he's automatic 20 points, 13 rebounds, and 3 blocks a game. And it's like,
yeah,
brother, he's never averaged 20 in his whole career, in one season of his career. So how are we going to come here and average 20? Are you serious?
Yeah.
And again, like, just like you said, like, defense is our problem. And it's offensively, we're fine. We move the ball. We do a good job of moving the ball. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you could always get some more offense. If you want more offense, I would never say no. But the biggest problem is like defensively, you know, and yep. If we're adding a defensive big that's going to come in and help with our rotations and be a communicator, be a stalwart, yeah, no doubt, you know. And then let's talk about Andre Drummond on the offensive side, right? Like you said, 10, that's unbelievable. That's how. 10 feet, you said, from the basket is far?
All 92% of his shots are within 10 feet of the basket, and he's shooting 47% on those shots.
So you got to – that he's making 28.5 mil, you said?
Yep.
28.5 mil.
I mean, it's expiring, right? Like, you'd be basically replacing him, his production, which is not great, but it's still useful for Otto's non-production, right? And Otto's not doing anything for us right now except waving a towel on the bench.
He got a great jacket too. That was a nice jacket he was wearing.
That's true. I mean, Otto Porter is a great player when he's healthy. He's so important to our team. So yeah. I really hope he gets over this. Like, I really hope he gets over the hump or whatever this back injury is and gets back and forth, because he's not worth $28 million, but he's probably worth $15 million on this team this year.
Yeah.
As far as his production goes when he's on the floor, but it's been tough. Last point I want to make about Drummond before we move on is, and this is something Salim just mentioned, but if you want to bring Andre Drummond to fight the Embiids of the world, you should take a look at the history between Embiid and Andre Drummond, because Andre Drummond gets his lunch eaten every single game. Like, Joel Embiid goes out of his way to troll Andre Drummond. Because of the performances that he has against him. So I really don't think Andre Drummond's the answer, but
not at all.
I also don't think that the problems he would solve are problems that the Bulls, you know, they're not on the top priority of the Bulls in the first place. Yeah. As you said, the defense is a major problem. It's gotten better as people are getting more comfortable with their roles, but there's still a lot to be done on the defensive end in order to really get, to get our team where we need to be. We're getting better. We're kind of middling in offense. Right. And we're I think we're like around 20th in defense. Yeah. So we're getting a little bit better. But I think a lot of it has to do with the coverages that we run. And so let's go right into the drop coverage. Let's explain, because the drop coverage is something I think a lot of us before this year kind of understood at a surface level.
Yeah.
But I really want to dive deep into the drop coverage so people really know what the Bulls are supposed to be doing, what each player on the Bulls is supposed to be doing in any given situation in a drop coverage pick and roll scheme. So
yeah,
take it away, Laro.
Yeah. So if we could just roll the first one here. So what basically, if you could stop it for a second. So basically with the drop coverage, even right now, you can see what Wendell is. And we hear a lot about Stacey King in the games. Why is Wendell all the way back there? That's too much space. You're giving these guys easy jump shots. And, you know, that's kind of the point, right? So in the drop coverage, your big is kind of protecting the basket is his number one job, right? So, and also keeping the guard in front of him. So if you could just roll it here. So Dame comes off now, right now. So perfect. If you could just stop it right when Dame is pulling up.
And for audio listeners, what's happening here is Wendell Carter and Kobe White are being put in a pick and roll. And what we've got on the other end is Nurkic is the Trailblazers. Nurkic is the screener, and Damian Lillard is the ball handler and going over a screen that Nurkic is setting.
Right, exactly. And right now we're looking at what you would call like a deep drop here, where you're usually when you run deep drop, it's against a big that is not a shooter. So right now in the pick and roll situation, it's Nurkic. And if you're an NBA fan, basketball fan, you obviously know nobody in the league is worried about his outside shot. So you're going to play a deep drop. But this is where it takes two in the deep in the drop coverage. So the point of attack defender. Kobe is currently getting around the screen to try to contest Damian Lillard here. He's doing the best he can, but it's just not exactly what you want. So you want to basically, when you're coming around the screen to contest and try to get back in front of the guard that's coming off the screen here, you want to get skinny. And what I mean by that is you want to if you want to step your front foot across the screen there and really just kind of get skinny around the screen and be able to attach yourself to the ball handler there. And so you're able to either contest from behind or you're able to get back in front. And one of the things that could be a problem is if you're coming off the screen and you don't get across clean, it's your job to find a way to get over that screen, because Wendell, who's in a position of the drop, he's basically just making sure he keeps the guard in front and staying at the same level as the screener. Either if he's rolling or if he's slipping, his number one job is to make sure he keeps the guard in front of him, protects the basket, and kind of persuades Dame or whoever the shooter is, whoever has the ball, to take a mid-range pull-up, a floater, a runner, because you'd rather have that than someone getting into the basket, get to the basket and absolutely demolish the rim. That's not what you want.
Valero, I want to interrupt you for just a second because you made a really good point here. And you mentioned Stacey King always talking about how he thinks Wendell should be up further in the coverage, right? So yeah. Right here, he's kind of in that mid-post area just below the free throw line, and he's often at that area. And that's kind of a normal drop. Deep drop is you get closer and closer to the basket, right?
Yep.
And an aggressive drop, you're closer and closer to the level of the screen. So those are kind of the different lingo here that we're using. Yep. But what the purpose, you mentioned this, what Wendell is trying to do, what the big is trying to do in the drop coverage, because Damian Lillard is coming off that screen and Nurkic is going to roll to the basket, yeah, because Kobe White's behind the screen now, it's now a two-on-one situation where, yep, both Nurkic and Lillard are diving towards the basket. And so what Wendell is trying to do, and what any big in the situation would try to do, is not stop either one of these players. His purpose is not to stop the player, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why he's not stepping forward. He's not stepping toward Lillard. He's not stepping toward Nurkic. And he's not getting real high because he's on a two-on-one situation. So the further back he has to backpedal, the worse of a situation he's in, the harder it is for him to actually contest a shot and deter people from, you know, from scoring. And you mentioned that he's trying to do is convince the ball handler to take a mid-range shot,
yes,
rather than a dunk, a layup, or hitting someone for a corner three, or throwing it back to do the three-point line for someone who's popping off a screen instead of rolling.
Exactly.
Right. And so what Wendell's trying to do is stall the ball handler. What he wants Damian Lillard to do is not make a decision. Right.
Yep.
And a lot of people think, well, Wendell's supposed to stop the ball handler. He's not supposed to stop. You're not going to stop. If you take a step towards Dame Lillard as he's rolling to the basket, he's going to blow right by you and you're going to end up in a situation. You're going to have to foul him or he's going to get an easy layup. Or if you go towards Lillard, then Nurkic is going to be open for a dunk, a lob dunk, right?
Yep.
And so I think that's what a lot of people who understand basic things about the drop coverage, but really the purpose of the drop coverage is to stall the ball handler, not to stop him, because you want to give the guy who got screened, in this case Kobe White, you want to give him time to get back into the play so he can continue to guard Lillard.
Exactly.
Right? Because when he gets screened, he's now a half a second, 2 seconds behind, depending on, as you mentioned, if he gets skinny and he navigates the screen pretty well, his recovery time is going to be a lot less. And that's what, exactly, the guards are supposed to do. But yeah, you know what I mean? So, but Wendell is trying to stall the play so that either they'll take a pull-up jumper from the mid-range, which is a lot less of an effective shot than a corner three or a dunk. Or he's trying to prevent him from passing until Kobe gets back so he can contest that shot, right? Does that make sense? I'm hoping I'm explaining that correctly. But
you're explaining it perfectly. I mean, if I'm coaching the drop coverage, I mean, the number one, the two things that I don't want is I don't want any pull-up threes. And right there, that is that is not what you want, especially from Dame or CJ or any of the best pull-up shooters in the game. You don't want that. But you don't want them at the basket. So the two things you want to take away is Wendell's taking away the basket, and the point of attack defender is their job is to run them off of that line and get them to be like to pull up in the mid-range, like I said, or take a runner or a floater. That's what you want in the drop coverage. You're basically telling you, hey, you can have the two, but you're not taking a three, or you're not going to the rim and getting an easy bucket. And that's like I said, that's what people are misunderstanding is that they see Wendell dropping back, and they don't understand why he's coming up. He's not coming up to contest the shot. When all in all, that's he's doing his job. There's nobody getting to the basket, and he is persuading the guard to pull up. So
now, does this become a problem, Laro? Does this become a problem because you've got players in the league that are really, really good at those mid-range shots? For them, that's a really effective shot, right? Yes. They may be a lot better at that pull-up midi than they are taking a three-pointer.
Yes.
And that big that's rolling to the basket, maybe he's popping. Maybe he's a great three-point shooter like Nikola Vucevic, right? Or Cat, Karl-Anthony Towns. So what are the weaknesses of drop coverage? Why is it not always what you should be running against those types of players? Because as you mentioned, that's the type of shot that the drop coverage is designed to give the offense, right? Because
exactly
in most cases, it's going to be the least efficient shot, but sometimes it's not. So what are the weaknesses of that drop coverage?
So for me, like a lot of it is personnel who you're going against, right? So the biggest thing for me, like, is if we're going against a team, like a perfect example is the Trailblazers. Like, you have two guys when CJ is healthy, you have two guys that can really shoot the heck out of the ball. And the weakness of that is if you don't have a good point of attack defender, like Alonzo or a Kawhi or whoever you want to talk about, that's a pretty good defender, Mikal Bridges or Matisse Thybulle, any of those guys that are just pests. If you don't have guys that have great technique of getting over a screen, being able to stay attached to the body and being able to persuade those guys, you know, that you're on their hip, you're persuading them, hey, well, I don't have to pull up three, so I got to continue to go. And hopefully, you know, my big rolls or my big is open on the pop, or I got somebody that's over helping on the weak side there. So but the weaknesses is, if you have a pull-up shooter and you don't have a good point of attack defender, the weakness is the pull-up three, and it's also the pop. So if you don't, the biggest thing for me defensively in the drop is the point of attack defender has to be pretty good. He has to be good at running guys off the line, and it's NBA. Guys are going to get hit pretty hard on screens. You're going to give up three balls to Dame. You're going to give up three balls to Steph. You know, you're going to give up to the threes to some of the best shooters in the game, but minimizing that, you know, minimizing that to the smallest amount is perfect. So those are two weaknesses, the popping big and, you know, not having a point of attack defender in my eyes are some of the things. And there's some things that you can do to combat that. And like I said, there's personnel. So if you're coming into the game, if you're Billy and you know you're coming into Devin Booker or Chris Paul or some, like I said, any of the better pull-up shooters, you may want to think about kind of adjusting the drop, you know. So if you can roll the next clip. So with this one, there's, like I said, there's a deep drop. And then there's also what we call an aggressive drop. And right now, that is what we call a hard hedge. So it's almost the same. A hard hedge and a trap is almost essentially the same thing, where you're kind of basically getting up into that ball handler's face and trying to rush him into doing something maybe throwing an errant pass or a turnover or something like that. You kind of like a surprise. So right now what they're doing is Garrett Temple is on the ball with C.J. McCollum, and we got Enes Kanter coming up to set a screen on Temple. And Thad is a lot more higher than he would usually be in a drop. And this is what we would call a hard hedge. So he's getting out there. He's trying to stop the ball handler from getting any penetration. You're trying to basically make him have to go around you or a little bit further out to kind of throw off his drive. That's another way to go against players like a Dame or CJ, where you can kind of throw them off, get them off their pull-up shooting, get them into spots they don't want to be. But now the other problem is this is what we have a problem with. So like when we go back to the Drummond, Andre Drummond, we need guys on the floor that understand how to rotate. So it's hard to play coverages like this. Like for instance, right here, right? This was a foul, so it wouldn't have gone in. But if let's say CJ splits that pick and roll, now we're gonna have a problem because you don't have guys on our back end that know how to rotate properly, and that's a problem. And that's why I feel like a lot of times Billy doesn't go to the deep to the hard hedge a lot or the aggressive drop a lot because I don't think he trusts his backside rotations. Mm-hmm. But this is another example. So hard hedge, you kind of just you get up on the screen on the ball handler and you basically kind of trap them, if you will. Basically the same thing as a trap.
Now this is more what the Bulls were running last year, right? They had Wendell running and trapping the ball handler, just like in this clip where Thad's coming up to the level of the screen. So as CJ is coming around the screen, Thad's right in his face, and so they're trying to prevent the 2-on-1 by. Now you got Thad in front of him, and you got Garrett Temple coming up behind McCollum. And so what that does and what Jim Boylan was running last year with Trapp, he had really great perimeter defenders in Chris Dunn and Shaq Harrison. Yeah. And then Wendell he used, and Wendell was really good at this. Wendell was great as a trapper. He'd come up and do that hard hedge or that trap. And what it would do is generate a lot of turnovers because if you had a ball handler that wasn't as skilled, that didn't make great decisions, that had high turnover rates, the Bulls would generate turnovers and generate a lot of transition buckets off of that. They were number one in the league in generating turnovers, right, and steals. And it was the reason that Jim Boylan ran that a lot was because he had two perimeter defenders that could really bother ball handlers in Shaq and Chris Dunn. And he had Wendell, who was mobile enough, like Thad is, right, was mobile enough to get up into that ball handler and still be able to try and recover to the rim if the ball handler made a great decision or split the coverage, as you just mentioned, split that double team. So, but the problem with that is, and the weakness of every single coverage has a weakness, right? The weakness with that coverage is if they don't turn the ball over or you don't stop the play, the chances of them getting a free dunk or a layup out of it are a lot higher than when you're running a drop coverage, right? Because the drop coverage is the biggest back there ready to stop that play.
Exactly.
If you know, the ball handler or the rolling big get to the basket, he can make a play. Whereas when you're hard hedging like this, the guy who's hedging, that big has to run all the way back to the basket. And now he's behind the play and trying to catch up. And as you mentioned, if you don't have great guys on the back end who are usually covering the guys on the 3-point line, if they're not sinking into the paint at that moment or they're not great defenders, then you're going to be giving up a lot of dunks. And if they do sink into the paint, now the ball handler can toss it out to the guys on the 3-point line and you're getting corner threes. And corner threes and dunks are like two of the best shots you can get in basketball. And so that's why last year we saw, even though the Bulls had a really high defensive rating because of how much they were generating steals and turnovers, they also had one of the highest rates, opponent rates of dunks, layups, and corner threes because of the hard hedge and that trapping blitzing scheme that they were running, right?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of pick your poison with these things. And another point I wanted to bring up, there was a discussion this week between Shaq and Candace Parker about some of the coverages and how the coverages were handled in Shaq's day versus now.
Yeah.
But, we've kind of gotten to a situation where these defensive coverages are changing and ball handlers are getting more and more skilled at, you know, countering these things, right? So the pull-up jumper, that pull-up mid-range jumper, a lot of guards are getting really, really good at that because they know a lot of people are running drop coverage as their base scheme, right? Or that pull-up three-point shot, that first clip we saw where Dame Lillard just, as soon as he got around that screen, he pulled up for a three. Yeah. And that pull-up three, he's so good at that. And so a lot of these times, it really doesn't matter what coverage you run. They're going to get their points some way. And that's why you've seen the offensive explosion this year.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, the Mavericks, I think, had the best offensive efficiency in the NBA history last year. And now you've got like five or six teams this year that are already outdone the Mavericks.
Yeah.
And even the Bulls, their effective field goal percentage is like one of the top 10 in NBA history, and they're not even in the playoffs yet. So it's crazy how you see that. So I actually wanted to roll this clip of that Shaq and Candace Parker discussion, because I want to ask you a question about it.
I think you switch at the point of pick and roll, but I do think that Jokic, like the NBA switches now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
why? Whatever happened?
Because everybody can shoot threes.
Whatever happened to man up?
Because you're going to be manning up trying to recover back to your man, and they're going to hit a three just like Jokic did.
Well, but whatever happened to pre-rotating and
then they move the ball around. And
you got 4 to 5 3-point shooters on the court. You ain't going to rotate enough time.
Not rotating. Not rotating.
Yeah, but you got to take the easy pass away. Like, if you ain't going to switch, you got to take the easy
pass. So that's what I'm
saying. Now you have guys that can throw the ball from one side of the court and find the guy in rhythm.
But that easy 1-5 pick and roll, the big is so far back, like Shaq used to be all the time.
And we won a championship.
But here you go. Just throwing a shot at you, big fella. I love you.
No, but did we win a championship?
We did.
Thank you.
Because you started getting up on the screen. But you.
So this is a funny clip, and a lot of people kind of made fun of Shaq for this, right?
Yeah.
Because he was so big and dominant that I don't know how much he really had to do on defensive coverage and how much he really had to know, right?
Yeah.
But the point I wanted to bring up is that basketball is constantly evolving, and the way that teams and schemes are being run are changing, right? Like Tom Thibodeau using the ice coverage, right? Using ice was a huge thing when he was a defensive coach for Boston, and then later with the Bulls, right? That was a huge thing, and then the league adjusted to that type of coverage and the way that they, you know, tried to veer the ball handler a certain way, right? And so Candace Parker here in this video says, now you got guys in the league, you got ball handlers like Luka, who can just toss the ball, you know, from one side of the court to the other so fast, they're so good, they're so efficient. These offenses are getting more and more advanced, and I think the rules as well are definitely geared towards rewarding the offensive player, especially when you look at fouls. You look at what Trae Young's doing this year, or Chris Paul has done, or James Harden, right? The defensive coverages are so much harder to run because of the offensive explosion and advanced talent that these guys are coming out with. And you look at a pick and roll, I think Nekias Duncan, he's a really great basketball mind on Twitter, he had a great kind of clip of the types of pick and rolls, where the pick and roll was being set in Shaq's day versus today. And like in Shaq's day, it was like at the free throw line, they were setting that pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then everyone was kind of clogging the paint. And now it's like they're setting it 3 feet out, you know, outside of the key, because you got guys like Dame and even Zach LaVine, Steph Curry, who can pull it from the logo and make efficient shots from there. Or you got guys like Luka, Kawhi, you got LaMelo Ball coming that just are making amazing passes. So my question to you is, you know, do you see the drop coverage as being effective in the future? And do you think it's something that the Bulls should be running right now as their base coverage?
To me, like, I think I've mentioned this to you before. I wish I was allowed some credentials, because I would love to ask Billy. what I mean by that is, like, I would love to know, like, did he choose the drop just because they didn't have that amount of time to kind of hammer home different types of coverages or their rotations that they want to run because of the COVID situation? They didn't have a lot of practices and things like that. But I would love to know that. But in terms of what you asked me, I definitely think drop I don't think drop should be a base. And what I mean by that is I think it should be personnel based. And yeah, you have the aggressive drop, you have the deep drop, you have, you know, the hard hedge and all that. But I really think that the game is going to another level, right? So you got, you know, Cade Cunningham that's coming into the lead. You have LaMelo, Luka, you know, I mean, Jason Tatum to a point where they're jumbo guards, these jumbo point guards, if you will. You could play the drop, right? So if he comes off the drop and the tag man comes over, and guys are processing the floor so fast nowadays, and there's not much you can do. You know, you can try to minimize the bleeding, but guys like Luka, guys that are just big, 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", guys are able to see over the defense, see and be able to read rotations a lot faster than what you would expect some of these guys. But I don't think drop will be around much longer. Obviously it'll still be around, but it won't be used as much. That's just my thing. I think at some point, everybody's going to try to go to the 6'7" across the board, you know what I mean? And try to become this just switch everything, interchangeable everything, you know? That's just what I think NBA, where it's going and where I think it should go, because I mean, there's not going to be a lot of teams that are going to be able to run drop against these guys that are in the league now. I mean,
yeah,
you know, guys can hit pull up threes, pull up middies, and in their sleep nowadays. So it's going to have to change.
That's really interesting what you said, because I think you mentioned when we started talking about the drop coverage and why the Bulls are running it. You said, you know, you're not sure if Donovan is using that, as you said, because guys haven't had a lot of time to, you know, didn't have a big training camp, didn't have a big summer, right, because of COVID and all those things that are going on. My theory is that this is contributing to the offensive explosion we've seen this year. And especially you saw early in the year, teams getting blown out like crazy. You know, you had like a 50-point win against the Clippers. I can't remember who did it, but, you know, and the Bulls are like the first one to come back from a 20-point deficit. But it was all over the place, I think, because not only is our offense is getting more advanced and these ball handlers are so skilled, but the defense, this specifically this year, they haven't had a lot of time to work on those defensive coverages as much, and they're rewarding offensive players in general. That, as you said, I think, you know, ideally you'd be running different coverages, in multiple coverages throughout the game, right? You'd be throwing in some zone, you'd be doing hedging, you'd be doing deep drop, you'd be doing regular drop, you'd be doing a lot of different coverages during a game based on who's on the floor. And because, as you said, guys get really comfortable, they get in a rhythm. And if they know you're running drop, like CJ McCollum was on Twitter when the Bulls were playing the Trailblazers the second time. And he's like, the Bulls are running drop coverage. Dame is going to eat all day. As long as they run, you know, as long as they keep the big down there, Dame is going to pull up for that three, shoot that mid range. And he's so good at that. And once you get a guy at that level in a comfort zone on offense, you're screwed. Right. So ideally, you'd want to have multiple coverages being run to keep the offensive player as uncomfortable and out of his comfort zone as possible, right? If he likes the right block, you want to get him on the left block. If he likes shooting, you know, from the elbow, you want to get him on the other elbow. You want to get him, you know, the whole point is to get them out of their comfort zone because these guys are so skilled, right?
Yes.
And so, but it's also really hard. It's also really hard to run several different coverages because you have to have your defense on a string. You have to have everybody trusting each other. And you have to have some sort of continuity and training to be able to run that kind of thing. And I just think the Bulls at this point don't have the defensive savvy. They don't have the veteran leadership. A lot of these guys that they're starting are really young. They're developing players. They're learning these coverages sometimes for the first time. So it almost seems like maybe this is where the defense is going to be this year. I mean, they can improve individually, but if they're just running based, you know, drop coverage is their base, and you got all these young guys that are basically learning it this year. You know, they're only going to be so effective on defense, and you're going to have to move that over to the next year. Next year, when they've got more familiarity with the system, they got a bigger training camp, you know, they're going to be able to be more comfortable in that coverage, and then also learning other coverages. And hopefully, the continuity will help with the trust and have the defense on the string a little bit more.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Okay. There's guys that like also too, when you watch the games, you gotta catch on to some things. Like guys like Luka, Chris Paul, some of the better point guards in the game, they're gonna run some things just to see what you guys are how the defense is gonna react. They're gonna run some kind of decoy plays. So if we roll, okay, the tag man is gonna actually come from the wing instead of the corner. So I know that if we run a pick and roll, the guy from the wing is going to come, the guy from the corner is going to come up to the wing. So I'm going to hit that wing or that corner every single time. And that's how we're going to attack this. Or it's a chess game with some of these point guards that we have in this game. And so now it's not even point guards. It's wing players. So you just got to watch some of the chess that's being played, because you may think you're having some success in the beginning of the game, and then boom. You know, they know they've been watching what your rotations are. They know where you're coming because you're not switching up your coverages. So, and the last thing I'll say is that's my point. Like, I don't mind drop coverage, but I would love to see some more variation of something different, because we got a hard schedule coming up, and some of these point guards are going to be ball handlers, I should say. They're gonna really know how to dissect it. You know, if we're not doing what we need to do and rotating on the back end, I'm cool with it. You know, because it's fine right now. We're doing okay. We're 16, 18. You know, fine. But at some point, I would like to see some different things going on. You know, so
yeah, you know, it's really interesting. My friend Stefan No, he's really good at breaking down these types of things on Twitter. He every once in a while he'll show Billy Donovan using a different coverage out of a timeout.
Yep.
To get the offense uncomfortable, right? Because they're setting up a play to run out of that timeout, and they're basing that on whatever coverage they were running.
Yep.
And so Billy tries to switch up the coverage, which is get him out of the comfort zone, blow up the play. And so, as you said, you need to be doing that throughout the game.
Yeah.
Not only just out of timeouts, but you need to be switching up coverages. And it's difficult to just look at that if you're just watching the ball handler themselves. And so exactly. one of the things I think that, you know, that we as Bulls fans can do is look off the ball a lot more. When we're watching these games, look at off ball to see what the coverages are, you know, what plays are being run, who's being exposed, you know, who's being targeted by different things. Especially when they're out of a timeout, those are you can see some really cool plays being run. And once you start recognizing these different coverages, you'll be able to tell a little bit better who's supposed to be where, you know, where the breakdown occurs in the defense. Because I think a lot of the breakdowns that Wendell has been blamed for, he's gotten a lot of blame this year on the drop coverage for being so low. And the broadcasting, I love Stacey King, he's a great entertainer, but basketball has changed so much since he was in the game. You know, that these coverages are constantly changing. So, you know, it's up to us to be up to speed on what's being run so that we're providing the accurate information, right? So we're saying, hey, this is what needs to happen here. You know, Wendell should never be stepping towards the ball handler and the drop coverage. Never. As soon as he takes a step towards the ball handler, they're going to blow by him, or they're going to get the roller on the lob. So I know it's been said a lot of times on broadcasts. It's been repeated on Twitter, on different podcasts. And so I know this week we really wanted to focus on that drop coverage, kind of explain it a little bit better. And so people can understand what's being run, what people are supposed to be doing, what Wendell's supposed to be doing, what Zach's supposed to be doing, what Kobe's supposed to be doing. So we went over, you know, what Kobe's supposed to be doing as defending the ball handler, getting over that screen, trying to run behind and catch up to the ball handler who's diving towards the basket. Talking about the big stalling between the two, you know, the two players who are coming towards them on that 2-on-1. So, you know, I've learned a lot. I feel like just looking into this, we've been able to learn a little bit more and appreciate, I think, basketball and how it's being run by the Bulls. So, you know, if you guys have any questions about drop coverage or about specific people who are being run through the pick and roll and, you know, where the breakdowns are happening, we're more than happy to talk to you about it. We're learning. We want you guys to learn. We want to appreciate basketball a little bit more. as a fan base and kind of be in the know as far as what's being run and be able to appreciate the game a little bit more. So if you guys have questions, you can contact us at KLA Hoops, at underscore Laro Hoops, or you can come and comment. We got a lot of comments today. Thank you guys so much for the comments.
Yeah, man, that's great. I appreciate it.
We appreciate your support. We're already over an hour. It's flown by. It's flown by, Laro. I can't believe we're already over an hour.
It's crazy. But, you know, like the thing I love about this Bulls team, though, is it has a lot to do with Billy, because they would have folded. If it was last year and they came out the gates like they did this year, it would have been a long season. And I respect that these guys kind of got it in the gear and have really shown some improvement, no matter if it's small incremental or, you know, guys or improvement by Zach, where it's like, man, this dude is just historically good right now, like how efficient he is. But, you know, man, it's just been fun this year, man. It's been fun. This is probably the most fun I've had being a Bulls fan since, I don't know, man, maybe since
MVP D Rose.
Yeah, man, MVP D Rose. But I can't lie, man. If Vince is in here, I was kind of a hater of Jimmy. I did have some fun during those Jimmy years too, when he was by himself. So, yeah, man. But this has been fun, man. It's been fun this year. So I just hope that these guys come out of the All-Star break and just continue to throw their best efforts, man.
Yeah, you know, I just love how they're competing. I just love how they're competing. You know, that's different. They're in every game. It seems like after those first two games, which were blowouts, they've been every game. So I'm really excited. Next week we'll break down some more stuff. We'll look at some different players. Well, you know, we got All-Star tomorrow. I'm excited to see Zach throw down some dunks. Hope he wins the 3-point contest. He's going to put the money balls in the corner, that corner that he's really good at. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Shout out Vincent Wong. Shout out Jimmy for life. Yeah, I love myself some Jimmy Butler. I love myself some Jimmy Butler. Yeah, no, I agree. So, hey, well that's the end of our show today. So you can follow us at KLA Hoops, at underscore Laro Hoops. We're here on the Barroom Network. You can follow at Bears Barroom on Twitter. They're so wonderful for allowing us to, host our show here. So thank Aldo, who's doing the behind the scenes work on these videos. So appreciate him. And we will see you guys next week, same time. Enjoy All-Star break, and go Bulls.
Yes, sir.